Indiana communities deserve a consultant they can trust. Burke refuses to give less than our absolute best. Not only that, but we're also fun to work with. We're going to do a terrific job for you, whether you need engineering, construction inspection, environmental, or planning services. Burke professionals are good enough, we're experienced enough, and doggone it, our clients like us. We think this has been a great ad and hope you do too. Statements based on net promoter score of 9.3. Burke is not affiliated with Stuart Smalley or Saturday Night Live.
Welcome to Market Street to Main Street, AIM's legislative episodes of the Hometown Innovations podcast and a supplement to our e-newsletter, Legislative Summary. During the legislative session, this weekly podcast series will offer a rundown of what happened at the State House and important legislative action and issues our members need to know about. You'll hear AIM's expectations for the upcoming week and the team's strategy for addressing critical legislation.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Simmons with AIM. Welcome to a special edition of Market Street to Main Street, AIM's legislative podcast under the umbrella of our Hometown Innovations podcast. Joining today are Mayor Chris Jensen, Mayor of Noblesville, and AIM Legislative Chair Jenna Bentley, Legislative Director Extraordinaire, and our CEO, Matt Greller. Guys, welcome.
Hi there. Thanks for having us.
Well, it's been a few weeks since the end of the short legislative session. We've had our legislative wrap-up webinar. We have our State House report that's ready to be published. We just thought it'd be kind of a good time to sit and just chat about the sessions, not go bill by bill, just maybe debrief a little bit for AIM members about the session, and then really start talking 2025, because if you've listened to this podcast or read any of our updates, you know 2025 is really where the rubber hits the road on some really serious issues for municipalities. So let's start by just breaking the session down into a few different categories for each of you. What was your highest high, your lowest low, and your biggest surprise? Who wants to go first?
I'm happy to go first.
All right.
Jennifer, this is Chris Jensen. Thanks for having us on. I want to thank AIM. I think our membership needs to know that we have just an absolute quality team down there with Jenna and Matt and you and others who are lobbying on behalf of a, you know, diverse set of needs that we all have. I think there's a lot of people who say if you've been to one city or town in Indiana, you've been to one city or town. So that applies certainly at 200 West Washington Street when we're going through the legislative process. I think the high for me from my seat was our real focus on, you know, we knew this short session was, if our legislative friends were true to their word, was going to be very short and very limited. Now that is always taken with a grain of salt, but I think they did an actually pretty good job around that. But one area that we did make some great progress in was the area of mental health and proactive paramedicine. You know, we issued Senate Bill 10, which ended up passing as House Bill, I knew it in front of me, 1385, ultimately, was really to pilot a program around the state around proactive paramedicine and mental health in our communities. And so we partnered with different communities like Crawfordsville, and we had folks from down in Southern Indiana to all the way to Northern Indiana, mayors coming and testifying about the importance of mental health and proactive paramedicine in their community. And so we're going to partner with the state this year to go out and help launch some more paramedicine programs within our community, like we have in Noblesville. We have Noble Act, which is a program that goes and seeks at-risk individuals prior to them getting into our legal system, prior to them getting into our medical system. So it's not only the right thing to do, it's actually fiscally conservative thing to do as we start to reduce public safety costs in our community. So I'm proud of the effort there. I'm proud of the exposure. This is really taking that whole erasing the stigma around mental health in our state and putting it into policy and into practice. So our goal this year is really to go and pilot some of those programs coming back in 2025 for full funding of a of the community crossing or the community cares program across the state. So that's been a real high, a real low. I think, you know, I don't know if I ever, I try not to have too many lows in even in this conversation, but I'll say there's always in a, at times a, assault, I hate to use that word, on local control and on some of our fiscal policy, especially around TIF and annexations that tend to pop up at the last minute as best as we try to be proactive about them. And they tend to be, you know, there's always that example of, you know, and a legislator frustrated with their community trying to push a policy then that has wide-ranging impact on all of us. And that's really difficult for us to balance because, again, we're trying to look across the whole state. So that pops up every time, but that's why we have Jenna Bentley on the front lines to help defend us against that. But we have been really proactive, and so there's a long answer to my highs and lows this year.
All right. Thank you, Jenna.
Yeah, I can piggyback off of that. Really a lot of overlap in what Mayor Jensen was saying, though for me personally, there's no higher high than when they adjourn sine die on that last day of session. The weight off my shoulders is like, you can feel it. But in all seriousness, Mayor Jensen mentioned it, whether it was mobile integrated health or some of those property tax related bills, there were members, and especially new mayors and new members, new clerk treasurers, who were engaged this session from day one, which was incredibly impactful. So that last week of session, when Mayor Jensen mentioned those property tax changes that seemed to pop up, having some of the newer members reach out to their legislators really changed the conversation and changed the game. But that does go to the lowest of low. I do feel like as these new members stay engaged in the legislative process, be prepared for topics to come up over and over and over again. And so one session when you feel like, all right, we've really settled this property tax issue, you can always expect it's going to come up another year, another session. So be patient with the process. I'd say big picture, a lot of things do work out, but it's only because our members continue to engage with their legislators. So that's constantly a kind of a low I internally battle is, no, you know, there's education we have to do with our members, there's education we have to do with new legislators, and that's why some of these topics come back over and over again. And I think you mentioned the biggest surprise for me, that was that they actually ended early. Every session they talk about ending early, and it rarely happens, but this one I was grateful that it ended a week early.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. I was shocked. I had low expectations, bit of a pessimist on that because we hear it so often, but I mean, yay. Matt, what do you got?
Well, Jenna took mine a little bit, but I would say the new leadership around the state, you know, Bloomington, Columbus, Carmel, Westfield, Angola, Auburn, Michigan City, just a few places that popped to mind, really did an excellent job of reaching out to their legislators on issues that may not have been super familiar to them yet, being so new in office. So that was a really good thing to see. I think it was a direct carryover from our work with the newly elected officials, efforts and training that we did at the end of 23 and the beginning of 24, which went extremely well. The lowest low, it's also been mentioned, just all the big topics and big issues that are being pushed to 25. So that kind of made me dread what's coming next a little bit. The biggest surprise, though, I think, was the work that Jenna and the team did, particularly on the House side with TIF. We had an opportunity to communicate with leadership and Ways and Means on the how TIF works, why it's important. And I think we really started to change the narrative there just a little bit from within that small segment of folks on the House side. So that was a really good surprise that maybe we didn't necessarily see coming out of this session.
Yeah, I think it's been said, but I'll just add the engagement of the new members, clerk treasurers, mayors, council members, et cetera. I really haven't seen it like this so early, not just at the State House, but also in education, in being present for roundtables, workshops, and statehouse business. It is always hard at the beginning of a new cycle for us at AIM you know, we're saying goodbye to people that have served for a really long time, that have a lot of institutional knowledge, and there's that anxiety about what comes next. And I feel like it didn't take long to tamp down a little bit of that anxiousness because of the level of engagement we're getting from our newest members. So I am really excited about that. Let's talk 2025. That starts, or I guess continues, Jenna, tomorrow at the State House with Salter, I guess. Do you want to define what Salter is, give everyone a quick reminder, and then explain why it's such an important committee?
Yeah, so even though session ended a little bit early, they are starting some of their task forces earlier than I can recall. So Salter is the State and Local Tax Review Task Force, and they are having their first meeting in mid-April with some of the major topics that were discussed during the 2024 session but didn't ultimately pass. So on the agenda, they're going to take a look at changing the excess levy appeals qualifications. We had a lot of conversations about that this session. Language doing that didn't pass, but they did add it to the list of topics to be studied by Salter. The conversations around the MLGQ and the maximum levy growth quotient. So in 2024, they contemplated extending that cap. While that didn't pass, they are taking a closer look at that. And this goes back to even last summer. Mayor Jensen and I met with Senator Baldwin, who's on Senate Tax and Fiscal, and he wants to take a closer look at how MLGQ, what MLGQ is, right? The six-year non-farm rolling income average, is that the right measurement for growth? He strongly believes that it isn't, but Salter is going to take a closer look at that and just really ultimately continue the larger picture conversations on local income tax. Can we get to a point where cities and towns are able to raise their own income tax? And then we're going to repeat a conversation that we've had several sessions in a row on business personal property tax. So it's really important that our members pay attention, because I think a lot of the findings that come out of this task force, you will see ultimately end up in an introduced version of a bill next session.
Yeah, Jen, if I can jump on that a little bit too, you know, I really think we've worked hard, and I want to hit on something that you said, Jennifer, about everyone being engaged so early. I think the work that AIM's done, and I'm not here to totally stroke your ego, but I will say the work that AIM has done to prepare newly elected legislative officials to be a part of that legislative conversation is essential. But I also say, I genuinely believe the job of a local elected official has evolved over 20 years. You know, we're well past the grip and grin society. We are not just kissing babies and cutting ribbons, although I love a good ribbon cutting, don't get me wrong, but we are well beyond that. We are truly policymakers and policy influencers across the state, and we have to be. We're closest to the people. We're out every single day in our communities trying to make a difference. And if Indiana wants to be the global leader that it can be, it's going to start in our communities. So city mayors, town managers, town officials have to be ready day one to hit the ground running and be a part of the policy conversation. So end rant on that. Transition to what Jenna said about these policies. I think legislators are narrowing in on policies that we all know matter, you know, whether it be tax policy, whether it is that non-farming rolling average thing that Jenna keeps talking about. I jokingly say that because I think Joe Hoosier has no idea that that is how we are capping our levy growth quotient, of which 10 years ago, I wouldn't have had a clue what that even meant. But it's real policy. So I think legislators are honing in on policy that really does matter to us. Now it's a matter of making sure we're at the table when 150 people bring 150 different ideas. How do we make sure our interests are observed and a part of the discussion? I think that's going to be our challenge in 2025, is honing that in, balancing the needs and wants of our constituents, what we hear, with the reality of funding local governments. And whoever can find that, strike the best balance there, I think will win the day.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point too. Even the way I talk about it, I think sometimes I have to remind myself that there are 150 members of the General Assembly, and a majority of them do not come from local government. So as you're beginning, as an AIM member beginning to engage with your local legislator, and you use acronyms like MLGQ, they might not know what that is, right? There's only a handful of members who serve on Ways and Means. There's only a handful who serve on Tax and Fiscal. So it's really important, I think, as we prepare for this session, to really break it down as simply as possible, that these changes impact, here's my public safety budget and here's what it would reduce, or here's my parks budget and this is what the impact would be, and make it as clear as possible the real life projects, the real life salaries these cuts or these changes could impact.
Matt, we have struggled for many, many years about how to do some of what the mayor and Jenna are talking about, which is talk about these issues in a way that makes people care and understand, right? So when we're at the State House, largely we will be in an audience in these committees, people who know what we're talking about, right? But how do we make that relatable? Because what they see, right, is a constituency group coming forth saying, don't hurt my piece of pie, don't take away my slice. But, you know, there's a lot attached to that slice, right? They're the people we commonly serve, those constituents. What are some of those message points that will resonate on, particularly on the issues before Salter?
Well, I think MLGQ is a perfect example, right? So I think most people, reasonable people, would say that if you're growing at X, you ought to be able to capture that growth, just like any of us with our checking or savings accounts. If you are getting a 5% return on your investment, you want to see that 5% return in your checking account or your savings account. Same is true in cities and towns. If you're growing at a rate that is greater than the state level, you want to be able to capture that in a way that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, if you're growing at a rate that's maybe slower than the state average, you need to understand that's a reality for your community as well. So I think you just take these alphabet soup concepts and thoughts and really drill them down to the most basic level possible. And that's what we have to do continuously to make the point, not only with legislators, but with our own membership.
How mindful do you think lawmakers are to the fact that as they change things for local government or change things for manufacturing, that is the real likelihood is they're actually passing that cost to homeowners, those that they've kind of started this process to protect?
I don't think they understand. The average legislator doesn't understand the inner workings of how the property tax system works and the shifts that are inherently involved. Mm-hmm. It's very complex. It takes years to really fully grasp. So I think often they're relying on the fiscal experts in a particular caucus to point them in the right direction. So it's a real challenge. And I don't think it's necessarily any fault of their own in many cases. Sure. It's just a system that is so complex and has had so many layers added to it over the years. Again, you've got to really drill it down to the most simplistic form when you're talking about it.
Right. Mayor, I'm sorry, were you going to?
No, you're fine. I think this topic too comes down to, you know, we always get so frustrated with, you know, well, that's our money, you know, that's we should be able to have that. Matt made a good analogy with your checking account, but we as local elected officials need to realize that this is taxpayer dollars. And then we also need to be better about our narrative. You know, I always say when we came into office 5 years ago, we put together our first ever capital improvement plan. We have a 10-year outlook that has $800 million of unfunded infrastructure projects on it. So when I get pushback, I say, listen, I have, this needs to go to investment in the community. We need to be able to articulate what are we lacking in our community that these dollars could go to improve, not just, wow, I want my money. But no, our taxpayers need these funds to invest in infrastructure, public safety, you know, whatever it may be in your community. You have to have a narrative to make sure that legislators realize that this is real dollars that are the public belong to, that pay into, that belong to the public, that need to be invested in our communities. And here's what we're doing with it.
It's a perfect point, Mayor. You know, there are countless studies out there done by economists and others that say those communities that are investing the least in terms of tax dollars back into the community are not seeing explosive growth, are not seeing new people coming in from other parts of the country, et cetera. So that's a really at a good point and a fine line of what we have to walk, protecting our taxpayers and not overspending, but also making sure we're adequately investing to ensure growth and things that we all want to see in Indiana.
Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about transportation like that. Pretty good. Jenna, you want to kick us off again, talking about the first task force and the maybe a little bit of history there for those that are new?
Happy to. The first task force originally started back in 2016 to address long-term road funding needs for the state, right? The goal of the first task force was to create a 20-year plan for road funding for the state. Fast forward 7-8 years later, and there's been some changes in the market. There's been just a different need for infrastructure, inflation, electric vehicles. All of these things have motivated the General Assembly to reestablish the first task force, which is the Funding Indiana Roads for a Safer, Stronger Tomorrow. They had a few preliminary meetings last summer to start to hear from NDOT, AIM testified, AIC, about what are the state and local road funding needs versus what they're already receiving in state dollars, and that the first task force was reauthorized this session to continue that work. I'd say some themes from it. NDOT is particularly focused on what the shifting market will do in terms of electric vehicles. So electric vehicle registration fees, that goes to local units of government. But as the electric vehicles take up a larger share of the market, NDOT obviously is going to want to take a look at the funding that they'll need to maintain their infrastructure. And I think a piece of this conversation will play out when it comes to Community Crossings Matching Grant Program. It has been one of the most successful, well-used programs across the state. We hear from our members a lot about how important it is. But to Mayor Jensen's point, you know, cities and towns look different and there are different needs. And so there have been some conversations on larger communities versus smaller communities. And I think this could play out in two ways, right? So NDOT last round already increased the cap. It was 1 million. They increased it to 1.5 million to see, will there be communities who take advantage of that larger amount? We've heard from larger cities in particular who say that $1 million is just a drop in the bucket for us. But at the same time, NDOT and us have been taking a look at which communities are applying or reapplying or not. And so a lot of these smaller towns or some of those cities and towns who are at that 10,000 population threshold who may just be above and qualify for that 50-50 match or may just be at that 25-75, they can't afford the local match piece. So is there an opportunity to potentially lower the match for some of those smaller communities but increase the cap for some of the larger communities? We'll see. I know there are a lot of legislators who are protective of the program, and so I do anticipate this will be a robust conversation. But just generally speaking, I think there needs to be more conversation, recognition of here's what locals are paying into local road funding, and here's our local stake in the game, the General Assembly likes to see, and here's our needs on an ongoing basis. So there could be some focus on which communities have adopted a wheel tax and not. But I'd say everything's on the table in terms of discussion, and I think it'll be a kind of a years-long process of seeing where we land with the work really being started with the first task force.
Mayor, Matt, anything you want to add on transportation?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that obviously that I'm very passionate about. I think every local leader is. And I think it again drives home what I said earlier, that we have legislators now focused on the prize, focused on what we want to talk about around road funding. Now we have to guide that conversation and make sure we have the authority and the reputation to be at the table to help guide that. I think Jenna said it perfectly, that Community Crossings is a great program, highly praised around the state, just awarded last week, actually, and with the additional cap of 1.5. But the facts of the matter are that some communities aren't going to afford that local match. So can we free up some of those dollars for larger communities? You know, and I think we have to be able to thread that needle where we make some of these changes that don't negatively impact smaller communities, but could have you know, astronomical impact to larger communities. And I think we have to start speaking not in a siloed voice of Indianapolis and others. And I use them as a perfect example. They're a capital city. They have major needs. They can't be the only ones out there trumpeting. It has to be, we have to band together around this conversation to paint a holistic approach. So again, I think that legislators are interested in it. We've just got to make sure that we whittle down those 150 ideas to, you know, what is really going to be beneficial to our communities as a whole.
I would just add, Jennifer, that anytime you talk about road funding, there's often winners and losers in the formulas that are used amongst our membership, whether that's larger communities or smaller communities. And I think historically we've been an information resource and tried not to get in between the lobbying or the communication or conversations that individual communities are having when it comes to road funding. So we'll continue to do that in a information gathering and distribution process, but it could become difficult as we wade deeper into this issue on where AIM is on in particular issues, because we have folks that are on both sides.
Sure, definitely. And, you know, I don't want to read too much into one round of awards, but I kind of feel like NDOT gets some kudos for this, you know, for trying, for hearing the concerns and being willing to experiment with increasing the amounts and whatnot. Because when you look through there, counties were taking advantage of that. The big cities took advantage of that. But there were a lot of small towns getting some really decent awards. I think that NDOT is definitely hearing the concerns and trying to meet them as best they can under current constraints. Jenna, we were looking at this yesterday. Did you walk away with that same impression?
Yeah, it's been really interesting because, you know, legislators did ask NDOT to take a deep dive in which communities are able to apply multiple times, which aren't, who's taking full advantage of that $1 million cap. And so taking a look at that list, it wasn't just the larger cities who were awarded that 1.5, but there were some small towns on there. But, you know, I don't know the backstory. Did they save up for years for that? So
Yes. I don't want to minimize that.
Yeah.
I mostly just want to say, like, I think to the point of winners and losers, I think that is something to be ever mindful about. But I do like that some of our folks are finding creative ways to get in there and make some things happen. And it looked like we were clearly seeing some county municipal partnerships too. That seemed evident by those numbers as well. So I thought some positive signs there on the transportation front. All right. What can our members do before we wrap up? Quick round the horn, everyone weigh in on what AIM members can do over the summer and fall to best position municipalities for the 2025 session. This is the low hanging fruit. I know we all have something.
Take a playbook or a page out of Mayor Jensen's playbook and communicate with your legislators, not just when you need something, when you have a new project coming into town, a new park that's opening up, whatever it might be, incorporate legislators into those things on a regular basis throughout the calendar year, so they're not just hearing from you during a legislative session when something is wrong or we need them to do something or whatever it might be. Build that relationship now.
I'll quickly just reach out to me if you're interested in meeting with your legislator. I'd be happy to help coordinate that. Mayor Jensen also has joined in on a lot of these meetings as AIM's legislative committee chair. And especially if you're a newer member or haven't met with your legislator before, I think we're really interested in helping provide you talking points, background information. We're pretty good at predicting what's going to come up each session. And so really lean on us. If you need any information, you need help setting up those meetings, we'd be happy to attend and help. But forming those relationships, like Matt said, is critical to our success at the State House. Can't overstate that enough.
Yeah, not to beat the dead horse there, but I think it's true. And I want to just take it a step further. Not only are relationships so important, but understand that legislators are not only trying to help you, like they have a whole laundry list of things that they're focused on as well. So when you go and talk with them about an issue that's important to you, spend some time asking, hey, what's important to you, Senator so-and-so? How can I help add value to your conversation that might not even impact the city realm or the town realm, but how can I be of service to you and help you move your agenda item forward? And then I'll also mention, you know, I always laugh. I have four small kids. I talk about them all the time. If you want them to continue doing good things, you need to heap praise on that. So if a legislator does something that you are really appreciative of, praise them, thank them publicly, you know, make them. I mean, I always laugh. I met with a group that was frustrated with one of our legislators because he was struggling to meet with them. But all this group did was just tear this legislator down at every turn. And I kind of said, like, why would he want to meet with you? You know what I mean? Like, all you do is crap on him. Sorry for the, you know, that's super PC of me actually, but
yeah,
you
know, that was totally fine.
But you know what I mean? There's gotta be something that someone's done halfway decent in life. Praise them for it. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So then when you do have to have a tough conversation, they know that you're not just there to tear them down every single time. So, and they want to be a part of the conversation. They want to be a part of a ribbon cutting. They want to be a part of just the conversation and just treat them like humans and it'll come back and you'll reap the rewards.
Yeah. I mean, really, really well said. I think that we all, you know, legislators and mayors, you share constituents, right? Legislators and council members, clerk treasurer, you share constituents. You all want the best for them. So those conversations can only help. And I will just add one thing. Just back on community crossings, but then fast forwarding to what you can do. Several years ago, when community crossings was in its infancy, as those projects were starting to come to fruition and we were cutting ribbons on new sidewalks, on new projects, we were bringing legislators, AIM, and our members together, taking some pictures, trying to help get local media out. You know, I see no reason why we can't keep doing that. When you are completing or breaking ground on these big community crossings projects, let us know if you need help pulling that all together. We'd be happy to do that. Happy to provide you with a checklist of things you can do to bring lawmakers and media and constituents together to show them the product of working together. It's worth it. It's worth a little extra time to make that happen. But I think we should leave it there. Congratulations to all of you on a great session. Thanks for doing this debrief today, Mayor. I know your time is tight. Thanks for being with us. And I know we will talk to you again next session.